It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. We're moving into July. July is, for me, July is the month of ripe fruit. Starts with strawberries, maybe a blueberry or two are getting ripe. The ones I looked at this past week were pretty darn green. I don't think you'd have eaten any of them. Well, I shouldn't say that, because when my dad was around and we were out picking up blueberries, there was always a few green ones that got in there, and he would just throw them right along in with the blue ones and say, you know what, they'll look good in the pie. And they did. And they, you know, you hardly noticed them in the pie. So, yeah, blueberries will be coming ripe this month. Juneberries are starting to get ripe right now. Remember, Juneberries, these are the ones, these are the plants that have a synchronous bloom in the spring. So all the flowers are open all at once on practically all the plants, and the bumblebees don't have any choice but to just go to the Juneberries because they're dominant. They're everywhere. And they're the first shrub to bloom in northern Minnesota. But they fruit asynchronously, which means that some of the fruit get ripe earlier than others. And the problem there is that, you know, you're looking at the bush, you're walking by and you're thinking, ooh, Juneberries, they're going to be ripe in a couple of days. The robins and the cedar waxwings and the white-throated sparrows and any number of other birds that enjoy Juneberries as much as we do look at those berries every couple of hours and say, oh, there's a ripe one, and they eat it. And so it never seems like there's a full shrub full of ripe fruit when it comes to Juneberries. The problem is that the robins are there eating the ripe ones as they ripen. And they're not looking to make a pie. They're looking to get a couple of Juneberries. So they're taking them as they ripen. And we just seem to end up hoping that they're going to all ripen, but they never seem to do. And so we wait and wait, and suddenly there are no more Juneberries, and the birds are looking happy and fat, and we're kind of left out in the cold. So what I do is I cover my Juneberry shrub with a poultry net so that the birds can't get in there and get the Juneberries, and that way I get to have enough Juneberries to make a pie on occasion. The crop isn't particularly good this year, at least not around my house, so I'm not sure what's going to happen with the Juneberries. But the rest of the month, let's see, we'll have raspberries, and I looked at blackberries this past week, and there were lots and lots of blackberries forming, so there were there was a great deal of pollination that went on, and there are there's a lot of potential out there for blackberries, but it'll be early August. Usually I think it's the 1st or 2nd of August that those guys start to come into being actually ripe. So there'll be other fruits through the month. Raspberries, I mentioned, pin cherries toward the end of the month, choke cherries, again, that kind of pushes into August a little bit, but a lot of those berries are going to come ripe in the month of July, and it will be a great time to get out and do some picking. You'll enjoy yourselves, and you'll profit from the experience, if not in berries, then in understanding nature at its finest. A lot of flowers are starting to bloom. You probably, if you're driving down the road this morning and you're looking at the ditches, you're probably seeing lots of white flowers and yellow flowers. Starting with the white flowers, there's the obvious one, the ox-eye daisy, and just calling it a daisy will be enough. You know, 2-inch wide white flower with a yellow center, that's the daisy. And then if you're watching and you're seeing more white flowers, there's a big plume of kind of creamy white flowers. And if you stopped and looked at that plume, you'd see that there were hundreds of flowers in that group. But that plant is called tall meadow rue, and it is blooming right now, probably approaching its peak of bloom. The appearance as you're driving down the road are these kind of creamy white flowers that are big plumes of flowers at the tops of these plants. And they're, 6-8 inches across and maybe a foot tall. So not easily confused with another flower out there, the cow parsnip. Now, the cow parsnip is a big disc, a big white disc of flowers. Now, this disc can be 7 or 8 inches across, but it's only about an inch deep. So this is going to be a big flat, think of a frisbee or a plate, of white flowers. Now, the cow parsnip is harmless as far as I know. In fact, I have read that the leaf can be eaten. When they're very young, you can pick the leaves off of the stems and eat that much the way you would eat celery. And that's cow parsnip. Now, there's a wild parsnip, which has a smaller disc of flowers, also a disc, an inch deep and 4 or 5 inches across, not nearly as big as the cow parsnip. Plus, it's yellow, pale yellow. So that's wild parsnip. Now, wild parsnip is an invasive, and it's dangerous in the sense that if you handle it, you'll get oils on your skin that will cause the sun to burn your skin pretty significantly. You can get some really serious burns from sunlight after handling wild parsnip. So if you have wild parsnip in your ditch, which is usually where I see it growing, it's going to be anywhere from 3 to maybe 6 or 7 feet tall. It's going to have these flat discs, again, umbels, if you are familiar with the term, of yellow flowers, pale yellow flowers. And if you have that in your yard, what you ought to be doing with it is you ought to be putting on long sleeve shirt and gloves so that you don't come in contact with any of the plant material. And you ought to pull it up and put it in a black plastic bag and seal the bag, because you don't want any of the seeds coming back out of that bag. But you can just, once you've done that, you can leave it in the bag, just throw the bag out in the sun and let it cook for a couple of weeks, and you'll pretty well kill anything inside that bag so that you won't have to worry about it regenerating. But burning, of course, or throwing it into the trash would be acceptable. But you don't want to just pull it up and toss it aside, because some of those flowers that are there will be pollinated, and they will produce seeds. And ultimately, you'll end up not getting rid of the wild parsnip in your yard. Remember, cow parsnip, bigger disc of white flowers. Wild parsnip, small yellow disc, smaller disc of yellow flowers. And the yellow ones are the ones to be on the lookout for. You want to get rid of them, and you don't want to get the oil of the plant on your skin. And speaking of yellow flowers, if you're driving along, you probably have seen now in the last couple of days the blooming of the black-eyed Susans, which are always kind of fun and truly a definite sign of midsummer and warmth. You'll see these bright yellow discs, rays, and dark brown discs in the middle. Just a really lovely situation, lovely to look at. The thistle plants, bull thistle and Canada thistle, are approaching bloom. Maybe have bloomed already. The last time I looked was on Saturday, and there were flower heads on the plants, but no flowers yet. So the thistles will be blooming. The difference between Canada thistle and bull thistle are the presence of thorns on the stems. So the prickly nature of thistles is pretty universal on the leaves, but the Canada thistle has fewer, in fact, almost no prickers on the stem, whereas the bull thistle is heavily armed stem and leaf. So be alert. Really doesn't matter if you're really curious about them. The Canada thistle has a redder flower, and the bull thistle has a bluer flower. Both of them are sort of in the range of purple. You have to remember now, my box of crayons was limited. But if you look at these flowers together, you would see that one has more blue and the other has more red or less blue. And those are the thistles that are blooming. I've still seen a few painted turtles out laying eggs. And this is sort of the end of that season. By now, if you're gonna spend 70 to maybe 80 or 90 days in a nest, you're starting to get pretty late in the fall before you emerge from that nest. So the painted turtles are trying to get it done before too much longer. The other thing I've noticed over the last couple of days are a few dead crows on the roads. So I went back through my dates and looked at some of the notes that I've taken about crows. And two things come out when you look at June and July for crows. And one thing that comes out is this god-awful screaming that the baby crows are doing because mom and dad are trying to train them. They fledge now, and mom and dad are trying to train them to feed themselves. And so they take them to where the food is, and they eat, and the babies are not getting the hang of it, and they're like, come on, feed me, put some food in my mouth. You've done that for 3, 4, 5 weeks now. What's wrong? Why aren't you feeding me? So they scream, and you can hear this screaming. You can hear it every day now, and when you hear that, just think of these little babies, you know, not getting fed, but wondering why they're not being fed. There's food right there. Mom and dad are trying to get them to feed themselves. And so there's a lot of ruckus about that. The other thing that happens every June and July are we start to see a few dead crows on the roads. And I saw one on the 30th of June, and the first dead crow I saw on the road. So I went back and I started looking. And in just about every year from 2006 to present, starting in, I guess the earliest I ever saw a dead crow on the road was the 11th of June in 2009. But running from then until the 27th of July in 2011, I have seen dead crows on the roads, but only in June and July. I guess not only. I mean, occasionally a crow gets killed by a car at another time of year, but typically this is the time of year when the juvenile crows are learning to fly and learning about all of the dangers that the world holds for them, and they inevitably, a few of them will get hit by cars. They'll not move quick enough to get out of the way of a car, and they'll be struck by a car and killed. And oddly enough, over all these years, it's just one of those things that happens from mid-June to mid-July when the juvenile crows are learning about cars. So drive carefully and try not to be, you know, responsible for the death of a crow. They're kind of neat little animals. Fireweed is blooming. That's that beautiful kind of magenta, sort of a reddish, well, what would it be? Pink, I guess. Flower in long stalks. I've seen the first couple of those, and they'll really be getting going here before too long. Sandhill cranes. I've got a pair of sandhill cranes that live near me, that nest near me, and for the second year in a row, they have appeared out in the hay fields together, mom and dad, without a juvenile. 3 years ago, they had a baby, and they successfully raised it. And last year, not so much. At least that's the assumption I make when I see the two adults out in the field and no juvenile with them. I just assume that they probably weren't successful raising a young to full size. So not this year again. And that's a little bit sad, but it's always nice to see the Sandhill Cranes coming back out into the hay fields near my house and feeding. So it's kind of fun to watch. Cattails are definitely in bloom right now. The male flowers are quite spectacular on top of the cattails. And the other note that I have that, if you really get out and start searching around, well, before I get to that, maybe a beaked hazelnut and American hazelnut, lots of hazelnuts this year. And that doesn't mean that there'll be lots of hazelnuts available to eat, but we have had a good crop and there are lots of nuts out there right now. They have a way of disappearing before we get into the season. Or when we think the season might start, they disappear all of a sudden in really quick hurry when they are ripe, because there are a lot of animals out there that find them just delectable. I was out for a walk up at Deer Lake Charlie's last Saturday, and we had spotted coral root still blooming. That's a little orchid, and of the orchids, there are still a number out there. Grass pink is blooming, dragon's mouth. The showy lady slipper is still blooming. The pinks are kind of done for the year. I suspect that you might find a yellow or two that are still in bloom. The Amarorchis rotundifolia, or I think is what it is. It's a spotted orchid that you'll find in deep cedar bogs, cedar swamps. So you might see some of those. And that's always quite interesting. And if you're out in the bogs and you're looking at these things, look carefully on the hummocks of the sphagnum, and especially those hummocks, and I'm talking about the raised portion of the sphagnum in the swamp, and look carefully on some of those side edges of that raised portion of the hummock, and look for the little insectivorous round-leafed sundew, because right now the round-leaf sundew is budded and ready to flower. And the flowers on the round-leaf sundew are the size of a pinhead, straight pinhead. Really, really, really small white flowers. And there are some that are just beginning to emerge. And I suspect that by the end of this week, there'll be some flowers on the round-leaf sundew. And it's one of those things, you know, if you're really into nature, it's one of those things that are kind of, it's like a little feather in your cap to actually go out, find a sundew, and then find the flower. It's one of those rarities that happens every year, but unless you're really out there looking for it, you're probably not going to see it. That's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, if you have observations or comments or questions you'd like to share, please get in touch with us.
You can catch Phenology or sign up for the podcast. Go to our website, kaxe.org. It is the Tuesday morning show.